Just before we start today, are you a teacher? Most listeners aren't, because we aim this show at students. But if you are an educator of some form, I just wanted to let you know that I'm co-authoring a special series this month on effective studying with this week's podcast guest, Peps McRae, for his famous ultra-concise, ultra-high-value Evidence Snacks email newsletter. In the three-part series we've put together, I'm sharing some of my all-time favourite tips and tricks that I've learned over the years to help embed smarter study strategies in your school, helping students study smarter, not harder, going beyond the research recommendations to figure out exactly what we need to be telling students to help them put good ideas into practice. In the email series, I'm even giving away some of my teaching resources so you can pick up some ready-to-teach lessons so you can deliver these ideas directly into your school. So you get slides, a little video, and even a workbook for your learners. Follow the link in the episode description to catch up on any emails in the series that you might have missed so far, and then sign up to Peps's Evidence Snacks email list to get the rest of the series delivered directly to your inbox. For everyone else listening, all my non-teacher friends studying hard for their exams at school, university and more, I just wanted to say, especially if your exams are coming up soon over the next few weeks, hang in there, my friends, keep going, you've got this. And now, here's today's episode.
Welcome to the Exam Study Expert Podcast, helping you ace your exams at school and university through the psychology of high performance and the science of studying smarter, not harder. It's my pleasure to introduce your host, the Cambridge-trained memory psychologist and exam success coach, William Wadsworth!
Hello and welcome to the Exam Study Expert Podcast. If you're listening to the show, chances are you've got stuff to learn for tests or exams, or perhaps you advise people who do have stuff to learn for their tests or exams. For example, you advise your students if you're a teacher, or your children if you're a parent. And in any event, if you are a regular listener to the show, you may remember that our favourite foundations for learning effectively are retrieval practice and spaced learning. And we put those two ideas together to make spaced retrieval practice. Retrieval practice, as you may remember, means testing yourself or pulling knowledge out of memory. Spacing means repeating that exercise spaced out over time. The reason we keep talking about this is that, put simply, the research shows that spaced retrieval practice is the most effective way to get stuff to stick in memory. So if you've got stuff to learn for tests or exams, you want to be doing as much of that as possible. Now, we revisited the idea of spacing in last week's Rewind episode with spaced learning expert and learning scientist Dr. Carolina Cooper-Tetzel. Today, I want to dive into retrieval practice and do a bit of a deep dive on why it's sometimes a little bit of a hard idea to put into practice. So I'm not going to be covering the basics of what retrieval practice is and how to do it. So if you're relatively new to the idea of retrieval practice and you want a bit of a primer and an introduction, you might like to check out episode 46, which does a good job of the basics, I think. The question I want to tackle today is a slightly more advanced one, which is all about the gap I see over and over between people being aware of the importance of retrieval practice and the consistency with which scholars actually do their retrieval practice. So many scholars I talk to these days have an awareness, at least on some level, that retrieval practice is a good idea. Not in every single case. I still talk to people who are new to the idea of retrieval practice, and that's totally fine. But I'd say the majority of people I'm talking to now have at least some awareness that this is a good idea, which is great because it's a really important principle. What's not so great is that virtually everyone I'm talking to is underutilizing this important principle and falling back on less effective strategies instead, for at least some of the time. So this can take a range of forms in practice. So sometimes a scholar might be making really very limited use of retrieval practice at all. Perhaps you don't have you've got kind of the awareness of what it's about, but you don't kind of have the confidence and the depth of conviction to really put it into action consistently. For others, they may already be using retrieval practice quite a bit in their studying, but you might still slip back into older, less effective habits, maybe when the pressure is on, perhaps in the final few days before a major test or exam. So in today's episode, I want to explore five big barriers to using retrieval practice consistently that I see time and time again in conversations with my study strategy coaching clients. We're going to talk about the five barriers, take a moment to understand each of them. And if you think you might be struggling with any given barrier, I'll be offering some tips on how you can break through that barrier so that you can get into applying the retrieval practice as consistently as possible, with the end goal of helping you study as effectively as possible for your best exam results with less study time. So let's take a look. What are the five big reasons you might not be using retrieval practice as much as you should, and how can we overcome them? In at number one, the belief that retrieval practice really works. So if you don't believe that retrieval practice is going to work for you, you won't use it. It's as simple as that. So cultivating this belief is a crucial initial foundation step. And I actually think that one of the most important functions of this podcast, and we've now reached hundreds of thousands of listeners across the world over the years, and for some of those listeners, I think one of the most important things we've been able to do is convince them that retrieval practice is really powerful and it's going to work for them, and thereby helping them to use it more or even start using it at all. So some ways we can cultivate that belief, if that's still something you need to work on. One way we can cultivate that belief that retrieval practice is really going to work for us is looking at the science and the data and the evidence we have. And I talked about this in that episode 46, the kind of primer on retrieval practice. But just to kind of offer a brief summary, we have hundreds and hundreds of studies showing the powerful impact that retrieval practice can have on learning all kinds of different material for all kinds of different learners. Jonathan Losky and his colleagues did a very famous review of this evidence alongside all kinds of other ways of studying in 2013. When I'm presenting on retrieval practice in a school workshop, I usually reference the specific study by Henry Ridinger and Jeffrey Karpicki in 2006. It's the most widely cited retrieval practice study. It's the one kind of everyone puts in their introduction to a new retrieval practice paper. And they showed a 20 percentage point difference in test score between the experimental group who had studied using retrieval practice and a control group who'd studied using some other study strategy, not involving retrieval. So 20 percentage point difference from using retrieval practice, not from any more study time. The study time was the same. The test was the same. The only difference was how they were studying. And this kind of difference is very typical of what we see in many hundreds of other studies done on retrieval practice. And I really just want to underline how big of a gap that is. 20 percentage points. Imagine adding 20 whole percentage points to your final test score, turning 45% to 65% or 70%. To 90%. Because that's a night and day difference, and could easily be the difference between a pass and a fail, or maybe moving you up two or three grade boundaries depending on your exam's grading system. It's a huge, huge difference. And one comment I'd make, we've been talking quite a bit about neurodiversity on odd episodes over the past 12 months, a really important thing to be talking about here on the podcast. But one thing to kind of note with retrieval practice is that I think it's such a fundamental principle of how human memory works. There really aren't any circumstances, at least that I'm aware of, where retrieval practice isn't your best option if your goal is committing knowledge or understanding to memory. So it doesn't matter if you're a high flyer or if you're perhaps struggling relative to your classmates. It doesn't matter if you have ADHD or dyslexia or autism or some other form of neurodiversity. Now, there may be different ways of implementing retrieval practice that suit some learners better than others. Those specific retrieval-based study strategies that do a good job of overcoming, for example, particular sensory or processing challenges you may have. But our end goal is always doing retrieval practice of some kind and finding a way that works for you to do that. Much as if your goal was to get fit, you'd want to be doing some kind of cardiovascular workout. And there are many, many different ways of doing that that can accommodate many, many different physical differences. You know, if running's not an option for you, maybe you go swimming, for example. But more than anything, what often flips a switch for reluctant retrievers is hearing relatable stories about students who have made the leap to retrieval and hearing the difference that's made for them. So the science and the evidence is all well and good, kind of hopefully kind of taking on board my point just now that, you know, it's really for everybody. It doesn't matter if you've got some kind of neurodiversity. It's kind of a universal thing for everybody that's trying to learn stuff. But as I say, like that kind of light bulb moment, that penny drop moment for many scholars is the moment they kind of hear a tale of a student that they can relate to who has started using retrieval practice. And this is exactly what I try to provide for listeners through the student story series we've featured on the podcast over the years, providing a range of tales that might speak to all kinds of different scholars out there listening to this show. So, for example, if you want to check out some past instalments of the student story series that do a good job of talking about retrieval practice and how powerful it can be in different circumstances, you might want to check out any of the following. So we had episode 69 featuring Rose, a high school student. We had episode 71 featuring Divine, an accounting professional. We had episode 73 featuring Michael, who was talking about his career through school and into university. We had episode 75, which was Charlie, who was doing a law conversion course. We had episode 108, SIBO, doing medical exams. And then episode 111, Adam, again, a finance professional, who talked about his use of retrieval practice with dyslexia. So if you don't yet truly deeply believe that retrieval is for you, you might want to check out one of those stories, perhaps a story that sounds relatable to your own circumstances. And I've linked all of those episodes for you in the show notes. As is so often the case when I end up doing one of these kinds of lists, my first entry on the list of five has turned into a bit of a monster. But rest assured, the other four are rather shorter. So let's dive in. Let's take a look at number two. Number two is retrieval practice is the learning. It's not the check to see if the learning has worked. It is the learning. It's not the check at the end to see if your learning has worked. So if I ask them, most scholars will say to me, well, sure, I use testing. Of course, I test myself as part of their strategy for preparing for exams. But when I kind of press them for details and dig into that a little bit more, there are some people, and quite a lot of people, who see the testing as kind of a check, diagnostic, to see if your learning has worked. So it's something you do at the end, after the learning, to kind of test whether your learning has worked. And if there's any bits that you don't know yet, then you go back and do some more learning. And thinking of the testing as the check is kind of backwards. Like, the testing is the learning. The very process of pulling that knowledge out of memory, or of probing your memory, as Daniel Willingham puts it, is the very workout itself that builds strong and durable memory. If you want to learn faster, test yourself. Practice recalling what you've seen or heard before. So rather than a long process of learning by, say, writing notes or rereading, followed by a test towards the end to sort of diagnostically check to see if that learning by the note making or the rereading has been successful, what you want to aim to do is maximize the amount of your whole exam process, exam prep process, that you're using retrieval practice for. The earlier you start the retrieval, the testing yourself, the better off you'll be. Number three is mistakes are a part of the learning process. So number three follows on quite neatly from the point above about the fact that the retrieval practice itself is the learning. It's not kind of a check to see if the learning has worked. And this kind of goes hand in hand with the point about mistakes being part of the learning process. So don't wait until you know everything to start testing yourself. Like, don't wait until you can test yourself perfectly and not make any mistakes on the testing before you start doing the testing. Like, this sometimes comes up with quite high performing learners because you're used to getting everything right. It can also happen with learners that are struggling a little bit more because you don't like making mistakes. And nobody likes making mistakes. But here's the thing, you are not expected to get it all right in retrieval practice. Mistakes are fabulous. They help us learn. They are a really important part of the learning process when we're doing our retrieval practice. Sports analogy. If you were on the basketball court or the tennis court or the cricket pitch practicing shooting or serving or bowling, you wouldn't expect to get every shot on target in your training. In your training, you'd get some shots on target and miss others. But crucially, both help you learn and get better ahead of the real match or the real game. So whether it goes in or out, that gives you feedback that helps you improve and get more accurate next time. It's exactly the same with learning for your exams. When you test yourself on a concept, whether you get it right or wrong, that still helps you to learn. So let's take an example. You ask yourself a question, perhaps by looking at the cue on the front of a flashcard. You try and recall the answer. You do the retrieval practice, either out loud, trying to speak the answer out loud or under your breath, or writing the answer down. And then you flip the card over to see if you were right. If you were right, great. You've strengthened that memory, so you'll be able to remember it for longer and be able to more fluently and quickly recall it in future. But if you're wide of the mark and you got it either partially or totally wrong, no worries. You've just sent a really strong signal to your memory that what you are trying to remember here, this particular concept, is important. And that will help that concept to stick for next time. I always recommend trying that same bit of recall again within the same learning session, perhaps even straight away if it's complex, and keep going until you can reliably pull that concept out from memory, so you can reliably test yourself on it and get it right. Number four is to make your materials fast so you can focus on testing them. So there are many different ways to do retrieval practice. I was talking about flashcards as an example just now, but there are many others. Different options will suit different personal preferences and different learning objectives. But whichever method you use, it's important not to get bogged down in material creation at the expense of testing time. So for example, don't spend so long making your flashcards that you run out of time to test yourself on them. This is a common trap even among quite conscientious scholars. And those of you listening, many of you are quite conscientious scholars. I mean, you've chosen to listen to a podcast about studying for exams. Many of you, and, you know, I hope none of you feel too attacked by this, but I really just want the best for you. You know, you put so much pride into the presentation of your study materials that you end up running out of time to actually do the retrieval practice. So you might spend so long just making a really, really gorgeous set of flashcards, for example. They're incredibly neat, colourful, illustrated maybe, but then you've kind of, you'd end up with virtually no time to actually test yourself on them. And that's a problem because we want to be focusing on the testing. That is the bit that does the learning. It's not writing the flashcards. It's when you test yourself on them. It's the testing bit of the process, not the writing bit. It's when you test yourself on the flashcards, not when you write them. That's the important bit. It's the testing bit. That's the bit that matters. When I'm working with private coaching clients, I work on various ways of accelerating the material creation process, if this is an issue for you. One practical step that will often form at least part of a solution for someone is kind of finding ways to dial back those presentation values just a little bit. You know, we still make them neat and everything, but we aim to start getting them made much faster as a result, and thereby freeing up time for that all-important testing, making our materials relatively quickly, so we can have plenty of time to do the all-important testing, the retrieval practice. Finally, in at number five, retrieval practice is going to feel like hard work. Finally, it's worth being completely open with you that retrieval practice, it's going to feel tough for your brain compared to some other strategies. Now, I don't mean that it will take a long time. I actually mean the exact opposite. It will save you time in getting your content learned to a given standard versus the alternatives. But when you are putting in that time, it will feel like a more intense brain workout if you're doing this well, squeezing your memory compared to, you know, the relatively, you know, compared to more passive strategies like rereading or even making summary notes or mind maps if you're doing them open book rather than doing them from memory. But learning to embrace that feeling of intensity as the feeling of making fabulous progress and associate the rewards and satisfactions that flow from that progress is crucial, just like any good athlete learns to associate the feeling of intensity in a good physical workout as the feeling of making fabulous progress. tying into this idea about, you know, retrieval practice, it's going to feel like hard work, but that is the secret to making fabulous progress in relatively efficient time. You may also like to check out episode 123 on how many hours you should study, and episode 53 on are you working too hard, for some relevant thinking on getting the balance right. Because in order to unlock your ability to work with this level of intensity, this kind of higher mental gear that retrieval practice demands of us, we need to have appropriate amounts of recovery, sleep, and self-care built into our routine. Otherwise, we quickly lose our ability to work at the level that the smartest retrieval practice-based study strategies demand of us. Put simply, if we're burning the candle at both ends, working really long hours, we will not have the kind of mental resources, the concentration levels, to be able to work with the kind of intensity that good retrieval practice demands. And that just means we'll end up falling back on less effective strategies, making less and less progress over time. Studying smarter, not harder, really is the key. The key both to unlocking your best final results in your exams and also getting there in a less stressful, less overwhelmed way. And when it comes to studying smarter, not harder, getting consistent with your retrieval practice is one of the biggest steps you can take. So remember, retrieval practice really works. We talked about the science behind it. And if you want more, you can go and check out some of those student stories to help convince you of how it can work for real students. Remember that retrieval practice is the learning. Aim to start it as early as possible in your exam prep process. Don't leave it as a kind of a check that you do towards the end to see if some other way of learning has worked. It should be your learning, your primary learning strategy in and of itself. Embrace the mistakes as part of the learning process. Make your materials fast so you can focus on testing yourself on them. And finally, remember that it may feel a bit hard, like harder work compared to other strategies you may be used to, particularly if what you do at the moment is a lot of rereading or note making, but the rewards are really worth it in terms of the amount of progress you can make in the same or less amount of time. So I hope this episode has been helpful in moving you forward, whether you're an old hand at retrieval looking to find the next level, or whether you're a total beginner taking your first steps in this all-important area. Either way, if you would like support in optimizing any element of your study strategy, from your learning and memorization system, as we've been talking about today, through to your mindset or your routine and productivity strategies, it would be my pleasure to serve you as your exam success coach and help talk through a personalized set of recommendations that will be as relevant as possible to you at your preferences and your circumstances. Every year, I help hundreds of students and professionals unlock the results of their dreams in their upcoming exams, and not only getting the results, but getting them in a smarter, less stressful way. And I would love to do the same for you too. Head to examstudyexpert.com/coaching to learn more and book your consultation with me today. Or if you are a school or even university, why not bring me in for a high impact workshop to take your students' study strategy to the next level this year? This is another major part of what I do, and the reviews from students and teachers alike are fantastic. You can read them and learn more, as well as get in touch if this is something you're interested in, at examstudyexpert.com/workshops. That's examstudyexpert.com/workshops. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode, and I just want to wish you every success, as always, in your studies.
If you've got exams coming up, you can now get all of William's favourite tips and tricks to save you time and get you higher grades, all in one handy cheat sheet. Grab your copy at examstudyexpert.com/free tips. Thanks again for listening, and see you soon.